Chapter 4. Loss of the Endurance. The ice did not trouble us again seriously until the end of September, though during the whole month the floes were seldom entirely without movement. The roar of pressure would come to us across the otherwise silent ice fields and bring with it a threat and a warning. Watching from the crow's nest, we could see sometimes the formation of pressure ridges. The sunshine glittered on newly riven ice surfaces as the masses of shattered floe rose and fell away from the line of pressure. The area of disturbance would advance towards us, recede, and advance again. The routine of work and play on the Endurance proceeded steadily. Our plans and preparations for any contingency that might arise during the approaching summer had been made, but there seemed always plenty to do in and about our prisoned ship. Runs with the dogs and vigorous games of hockey and football on the rough snow-covered floe kept all hands in good fettle. The record of one or two of these September days will indicate the nature of our life and our surroundings. September 4th. Temperature minus 14.1 degrees Fahrenheit. Light easterly breeze, blue sky and stratus clouds. During forenoon, notice a distinct terracotta or biscuit colour in the stratus clouds to the north. This travelled from east to west and could conceivably have come from some of the Grahamland volcanoes, now about 300 miles distant to the northwest. The upper current of air probably would come from that direction. Heavy rime. Pack unbroken and unchanged as far as visible. No land for 22 miles. No animal life observed. September 7th. Temperature minus 10.8 degrees Fahrenheit. Moderate easterly to southerly winds, overcast and misty, with light snow till midnight when weather cleared. Blue sky and fine clear weather to noon. Much rime aloft. Thick fresh snow on ship and floe that glistens brilliantly in the morning sunlight. Little clouds of faint violet-coloured mist rise from the lower and brinier portions of the pack, which stretches unbroken to the horizon. Very great refraction all round. A tabular berg about 50 feet high 10 miles west is a good index of the amount of refraction. On ordinary days it shows from the masthead clear cut against the sky. With much refraction, the pack beyond at the back of it lifts up into view. Today, a broad expanse of miles of pack is seen above it. Numerous other bergs generally seen in silhouette are, at first sight, lost, but after a closer scrutiny they appear as large lumps or dark masses well below the horizon. Refraction generally results in too big an altitude when observing the sun for position, but today the horizon is thrown up so much that the altitude is about 12 minutes too small. No land visible for 20 miles, no animal life observed. Lower Clark's tow-net with 566 fathoms of wire and hoisted up at 2.5 miles an hour by walking across the floe with the wire. Result rather meagre, jellyfish and some fish larvae. Exercise dogs in sledge teams. The young dogs under Crean's care pull as well, though not so strongly, as the best team in the pack. Hercules, for the last fortnight or more, has constituted himself leader of the orchestra. 2 or 3 times in the 24 hours he starts a howl, a deep, melodious howl, and in about 30 seconds he has the whole pack in full song, the great, deep, booming, harmonious song of the half-wolf pack. By the middle of September we were running short of fresh meat for the dogs. The seals and penguins seemed to have abandoned our neighbourhood altogether. Nearly 5 months had passed since we killed a seal, and penguins had been seen seldom. Clark, who was using his trawl as often as possible, reported that there was a marked absence of plankton in the sea, and we assumed that the seals and the penguins had gone in search of their accustomed food. The men got an emperor on the 23rd. The dogs, which were having their sledging exercise, became wildly excited when the penguin, which had risen in a crack, was driven ashore, and the best efforts of the drivers failed to save it alive. On the following day, Wilde, Hurley, Macklin and McElroy took their teams to the Stained Berg, about 7 miles west of the ship, and on their way back got a female crab-eater, which they killed, skinned and left to be picked up later. They ascended to the top of the berg, which lay in about latitude 69 degrees 30 minutes south, longitude 51 degrees west, and from an elevation of 110 feet could see no land. Samples of the discoloured ice from the berg proved to contain dust with black gritty particles or sand grains. Another seal, a bull Weddell, was secured on the 26th. The return of seal life was opportune, since we had nearly finished the winter supply of dog biscuit and wished to be able to feed the dogs on meat. The seals meant a supply of blubber, moreover, to supplement our small remaining stock of coal when the time came to get up steam again. We initiated a daylight saving system on this day by putting forward the clock 1 hour. This is really pandering to the base but universal passion that men, and especially seafarers, have for getting up late. Otherwise we would be honest and make our routine earlier instead of flogging the clock. During the concluding days of September, the roar of the pressure grew louder, and I could see that the area of disturbance was rapidly approaching the ship. Stupendous forces were at work, and the fields of firm ice around the Endurance were being diminished steadily. September 30th was a bad day. It began well, for we got 2 penguins and 5 seals during the morning. 3 other seals were seen. But at 3 p.m., cracks that had opened during the night alongside the ship commenced to work in a lateral direction. The ship sustained terrific pressure on the port side forward, the heaviest shocks being under the fore rigging. It was the worst squeeze we had experienced. The decks shuddered and jumped, beams arched and stanchions buckled and shook. I ordered all hands to stand by in readiness for whatever emergency might arise. Even the dogs seemed to feel the tense anxiety of the moment. But the ship resisted valiantly, and just when it appeared that the limit of her strength was being reached, the huge floe that was pressing down upon us cracked across and so gave relief. "The behaviour of our ship in the ice has been magnificent," wrote Worsley. "Since we have been beset, her staunchness and endurance have been almost past belief again and again. She has been nipped with 1,000,000-ton pressure and risen nobly, falling clear of the water out onto the ice. She has been thrown to and fro like a shuttlecock 12 times. She has been strained, her beams arched upwards by the fearful pressure, her very sides opened and closed again as she was actually bent and curved along her length, groaning like a living thing. It will be sad if such a brave little craft should be finally crushed in the remorseless, slowly strangling grip of the Weddell pack, after 10 months of the bravest and most gallant fight ever put up by a ship. The Endurance deserved all that could be said in praise of her. Shipwrights had never done sounder and better work. But how long could she continue the fight under such conditions? We were drifting into the congested area of the Western Weddell Sea, the worst portion of the worst sea in the world, where the pack, forced on irresistibly by wind and current, impinges on the western shore and is driven up in huge corrugated ridges and chaotic fields of pressure. The vital question for us was whether or not the ice would open sufficiently to release us, or at least give us a chance of release, before the drift carried us into the most dangerous area. There was no answer to be got from the silent bergs and the grinding floes, and we faced the month of October with anxious hearts. The leads in the pack appeared to have opened out a little on October 1st, but not sufficiently to be workable, even if we had been able to release the Endurance from the floe. The day was calm, cloudy and misty in the forenoon, and clearer in the afternoon, when we observed a well-defined parhelia. The ship was subjected to slight pressure at intervals. 2 bull crab-eaters climbed onto the floe close to the ship and were shot by Wild. They were both big animals in prime condition, and I felt that there was no more need for anxiety as to the supply of fresh meat for the dogs. Seal liver made a welcome change in our own menu. The 2 bulls were marked, like many of their kind, with long parallel scars about 3 inches apart, evidently the work of the killers. A bull we killed on the following day had 4 parallel scars, 16 inches long, on each side of its body. They were fairly deep, and 1 flipper had been nearly torn away. The creature must have escaped from the jaws of a killer by a very small margin. Evidently, life beneath the pack is not always monotonous. We noticed that several of the bergs in the neighbourhood of the ship were changing their relative positions more than they had done for months past. The floes were moving. Our position on Sunday, October 3rd, was latitude 69 degrees 14 minutes south, longitude 51 degrees 8 minutes west. During the night, the floe holding the ship aft cracked in several places, and this appeared to have eased the strain on the rudder. The forenoon was misty, with falls of snow. But the weather cleared later in the day, and we could see that the pack was breaking. New leads had appeared, while several old leads had closed. Pressure ridges had risen along some of the cracks. The thickness of the season's ice, now about 230 days old, was 4 feet 5 inches under 7 or 8 inches of snow.